Welcome to Gospel Central, where we discuss topics that encourage Christians to live lives in a way that's pleasing to God. We're specifically interested to know how the very center of the Christian faith, that is the good news of Jesus' death and resurrection, empowers us to live these lives that are zealous for God and pleasing to Him. So we're your hosts. I'm Simon.
And I'm Matt.
And we're glad to have you join us today. Well, today, very happy to have a fellow pastor and friend, Andrew Purchase, with us, who is commonly known as Perch. So, Perch, welcome.
Thank you. Great to be here, everyone.
Good to see you.
Perch, before we dive in, why on earth are you called Perch?
Well, this is the million-dollar question. let's put it like this. My father is called Podge. My brother is called Butch. And I got away with Perch. So, I definitely think I'm the winner on the family. So, it's surname is Purchase. But since I was about 6 years old, everyone just called me Perch. And it stuck. And it's followed me from city to city. It's like... it sticks.
That is your name.
That's your last name, right?
That is my surname.
The mystery is, why aren't the rest of the family called Perch?
Exactly. My dad was a little tubby. So the Podger explains that one. And my brother is a lot better built than me. So he was Butch. So
I see.
And when you came to the RHC office, someone started calling you Patch by mistake. So that's kind of become a...
I'll never, ever forget Jacobing. I just want to go on record that it was Jacobing. He can't even read his notes properly.
All right. Well, before we get too carried away, Perch, it's great to have you here. Perch is one of the pastors at RHC and the director for City Renewal. One of the areas that City Renewal is involved with is church planting. And that's our topic for today. So we want to talk about church planting. Does Singapore need church planting? What is it? And share a little bit of our own journeys and stories with regard to church planting. So why don't we begin? Ed, I'm going to ask you to kick us off. If I were to ask you, what is church planting? What would you say?
I don't know if you ask me. I imagine it's someone getting on his soapbox and just preaching the gospel, gathering people around him or her, and you planted a church. Isn't that what church planting is?
I think it's certainly an element of it.
Yeah, church planting, I think, is the vision of actually valuing the importance of a local church. And I think can look. There are many forms of church planting, but I think the big idea is, how do you, in a sense, work towards the establishment of a new local church, right? That may or may not tie to denomination, that may gather in ways that look different from how other churches gather, but nonetheless, it is genuinely a local church that's established. I think that's what church planting is about.
Anything to add to that, Perch?
I love that. I'd totally go with that. I would add probably the phrase of a gospel community, the formation of a gospel community, starting that, giving birth to it. I think often, I mean, you were joking about it just now, it often is one guy with the Bible standing at the front preaching. That's what people think of church planting, but I think a more healthy definition is the birthing of a whole brand new gospel community.
Right.
That's beautiful. So Ed, I know that you referred earlier to the fact that church planting can take many forms, and we'll talk about that later on. But let's think a little bit about why church planting. Why is this something that we believe all Christians should care about, should pray for, should consider if they can support or be involved in to some extent? Who wants to take a stab at that?
Well, I defer to my learned colleague on my left here. He's good with numbers. Ed, what are the numbers in Singapore? What are the percentage Christians and who's unreached? And if you had a church of 200, call it, how many churches would we need to get the missing percentage?
That's about like what? It's close to 6 million people in Singapore. And maybe we have, even if you include Roman Catholics, we have like close to only 15%, I think, of the population. They are considered themselves church attending. And given that, if you think about it, if we really need to reach the whole Singapore, you know, like, I don't know, 200 or 500 persons per church, right? You're actually probably looking at like, you're looking at tens of thousands of churches that actually require in Singapore. So in one sense, I know that it can look like very much that Singapore is very much church. You can see a church in every corner. But in terms of really the number of gospel communities, to use your term, to reach Singapore, we are vastly behind in terms of what is really needed.
I think that's a really good point to reflect on, because that is one of the initial objections many people have to church planting in Singapore. Yeah. When you just look around, it does seem like there are lots of churches, and by some measures, there are many Christians in Singapore, and we're certainly very glad that 15 to 20% of the population considers themselves to be Christian. That really is absolutely tremendous. And yet, whilst that is a pretty decent percentage, the fact is that leaves at least 80% of the population here that don't know Jesus, have an eternity apart from him, and as Christians, we're desperate for them to come to know him and to love him. And we know that the local church plays a crucial role in that. And so even though it seems on the surface like there are many churches, the reality is there's space for not even a few more, but hundreds or thousands more churches, actually. And that's what we would love to see happening in Singapore. So I guess when we just think about the sheer numbers, we can see that there definitely is a need for it. But Perch, are there other benefits to church planting that, not in terms of just seeing people saved and added to the kingdom, but ways that church planting kind of contributes to the gospel ecosystem in a city?
That's a fantastic question. I certainly think, through my own observation and reading up on this topic, and also seeing it in the Bible, I think there are enormous benefits to a church planting culture in a city. I think the innovation it takes to pull off a new church plant takes a lot of thinking through, and that innovative entrepreneurial kind of spirit and thought process, I think, becomes a benefit to a lot of people as they see new things being modeled. I mean, so often you see churches sort of just stuck in one lens or one mode of thinking, and they can't necessarily reach other parts of the community as well. So when you plant a church, you got to think through all of that, like how sharp to make the tool, customize the tool to reach a particular group. So that kind of innovative thinking, I think, is essential and a blessing to others.
Yeah, if I can add to that, I feel that church planting is even beneficial for the church that seeks to plant another church, right? Because sometimes we can become very insular, we can become very inward looking in terms of just growing our numbers. I mean, not that there's something wrong in that in and of itself, but sometimes it can just lure, you know, Christians to be just pew warmers, not really thinking about how it can be engaged in mission for God. But when they actually get excited about that, this is actually a church that seeks to plant churches, and they see this vision of something I can participate in, it actually excites the members. And, you know, I mean, beyond just the entrepreneurship and the innovation you're talking about, it's really, and I think in that process, helping even Christians to get excited about mission and to even mature, I mean, as a process of that, I think that's actually something good.
Definitely. And as an example of that is just leadership development, right? You need leaders to rise up to take new frontiers. And then what it does, and to your point of the sending church or the planting church, the church at least that sends the planters out, it creates space then, and then it more people need to rise up internally, and so you're reproducing your leadership pool all the time.
If I can think even from a church leadership point of view, of the church that sends a group of people, when I think back a number of years when Ed, you were involved with Z in planting the afternoon congregation at RHG, it wasn't technically a church plant, but what happened was we had about 60 or 70 people move from our one of the morning congregations to move to the afternoon. And those people tended to be those who were committed, involved, leading CGs. And so that left a huge vacuum in the morning, actually. And one of the things that that did for those of us pastors who were left in the mornings was really kept us focused on the main thing. We have to really develop and disciple people. And so there's a sense in which I think church planting for everyone involved, whether it's those that are going or those that are staying, really helps to keep you on mission, focused, not just getting complacent, as you said, Ed, but really reminding us all, what is the heart of our faith? What's our task? Preach the gospel, make disciples, and get all of God's people to be a kingdom of priests that are involved in serving him. So we certainly saw that when we just started that morning, that afternoon congregation.
Yeah. And to reference the Great Commission that you did just there, I think that's a great lens to think about this, because it's to reach as many people groups as possible, right? So I think that is a fantastic reason to plant churches, is you're raising up these sort of customized communities to reach different segments of the community or different demographics. And I think the more of that we can do, the more of the city that we can actually reach.
That's a great point. I think in theory, we know churches should be incredibly diverse and should open their doors to people of all different backgrounds. And yet, I guess until we get to heaven, there is some reality that people are able to feel comfortable among certain groups.
Yeah.
And even just from a contextualization point of view, your examples, illustrations, the kind of people that you're reaching, you do tend to have a somewhat homogenized group of people that you in reality end up reaching. And so if you really want to reach an entire city that's made up of so many diverse people, you're going to need a huge number of churches that can actually do that and focus and really see healthy gospel communities in, say, X community or Y community, where those people have a real lived out, fleshed out gospel presence.
Yeah. And then to see it as a team sport, right? Partnering with other churches across the city. If all of us are thinking in those terms, you can just reach so many more groups of the community.
I was just going to say that when you even think about you know, the number, the kind of diversity that we actually need, I think not in terms of only the demographics that we are reaching, but even diversities of just how God has made us in terms of temperament, in terms of personality, right? You have churches that are, I mean, I just listened to a talk by Tim Keller recently where he's talked about like how they are what is called exile churches, where they major in helping the church to really embrace what it means to live in a broken world, and where there are also some what is called kingdom churches where they are more focused on, you know, in a sense of how do you bring about God's justice and God's kingdom into this world. But yet Keller actually argues that both of these sort of churches and many other kinds can actually be gospel preaching, gospel centered churches. So and you can imagine that actually the way that God has wired us, we actually draw us to one of these churches more than the other, and in God's kingdom there's really no, we shouldn't be saying that this is one is actually better than the, than the other, as long as they are all genuinely following Jesus. And in that sense, a lot more churches are needed too, because otherwise we tend to think as well, getting this mindset that, oh, only churches should be looking like this and not having other kind of healthy expressions as well.
One of the things that Redeemer City to City has really emphasized over the years that was something that I really grew to appreciate because of them was how in a city you need a gospel ecosystem, which is that it doesn't just take, as you said, it one type of church or even Christian organization to reach a city, but you need a huge diversity of them for those exact reasons that you mentioned. And then we all need to kind of put hands together to be working together, praying together for the good of the city, but recognizing we all have a unique role to play. So for that reason, we just want, we need hundreds and thousands of churches that hopefully are all proclaiming the gospel. That's the center of the church, but seeing different facets and aspects of the riches of the gospel displayed.
Absolutely. It also liberates people to flow with their particular style, which may be a repeat of your point, Ed. Like the talents, the giftings, the anointings, the skills that God has given different people and different communities, then there's a freedom for those folks to run with it and allow other people the freedom to run with theirs too.
I guess even to think about things like, you know, pastors and churches and styles, not to talk too much about Tim Keller, but I know many people love Tim Keller and his preaching reaches a very, very broad group of people, but it's probably a certain demographic, a certain kind of person that really is appealed to. And there are other preachers who have very different styles, are still preaching the gospel as faithful, but they just appeal to a completely different kind of person. And if you're trying to do carbon copy Tim Keller preaching throughout a city, you actually really are limiting the scope and the reach of the gospel, because God hasn't designed for his gospel message to be articulated in one particular way, in one style, one academic style. And so, again, just another argument for why such diversity is needed, and therefore more and more church plants are needed.
Absolutely. And even on a lower level with the man or lady in the pew, let alone the preacher, right? Just for those folks to express love and to love certain geographic regions or parts of the city or demographics of the city, that's where the real action of church planting is in many ways, is real people loving real people, bringing them and sharing the gospel in their lounge. I think that's a key part of this.
So Ed, that's a great point that Perch brings up. I think one of the reasons that we want to talk about this is because we do believe, as we look at the scriptures, which we'll talk about in the following episode, that church planting is really central to the mission of God going forward. Mm-hmm. And that when Jesus gave us the Great mm-hmm. Commission, part of what's embedded in mm-hmm. that command is actually to plant churches, because mm-hmm. people are being baptized mm-hmm. and taught everything that Jesus commanded us. I guess it's possible for Christians to see kingdom work through a very broad lens.
Right.
And in some sense, we all know that all of our work and vocation can be done to the glory of God. Mm-hmm. And yet, I guess it's part of our contention here that church planting should really form a focus or a central mm-hmm. part of how we see the Great Commission expressed. Why would we see the forming of churches as being so central to us obeying mm-hmm. the Great Commission?
Well, I think that we will talk about this later on in the next episode where the Bible, how it connects to church planting. But I think a primary conviction that one has to land would be that how the local church is not even just only one of the ways that God reaches his people, so to speak, but it's actually the primary way
mm.
in which that actually God actually reaches people with the gospel.
Mm.
Yeah. So once you have captured that self-conviction regarding that, then you see that actually it's through this lens of really forming what, you know, Perch earlier referred to as gospel communities
mm.
that actually eventually helps us to fulfill the Great Commission. And without actually going through all the details, I mean, I would say that a lot of missions, whenever there is some sense of lack of sustainability or lack of some sense of failure in a sense, a lot of those failures and lack of sustainability can be traced ultimately to maybe how, you know, sometimes just put in terms of, oh, we're not here to make converts, we just want to, well, we should be making disciples. But I think it's even more than that, because mm. not only are we not to only make converts, or not only are we to make disciples, but if the disciples are actually not put into communities where they are called to love one another and mm. in a sense to covenant with one another, yeah. even, right? Essentially, no matter how many of them there are, they're essentially just solo warriors out in a frontier, and that's why it's easy to cut them down. But rather, it's actually to put church planting is really what is, I think is a kind of outpost of at the frontier, in a sense, right, where the soldiers can be gathered, and which then it can help to form a base for even further advancement of the kingdom,
mm.
right? And I think with that image in mind, we can then easily see how church planting is actually key to fulfilling the Great Commission.
That makes a lot of sense. I think, Perch, when we think about evangelism, many Christians may think, okay, my task is to see people come to faith and evangelize. But I guess the Bible's vision is that evangelism doesn't just happen in a vacuum, but sure. results in people being added to gospel
yeah,
communities.
Yeah,
and so even when you think about things like apologetics ministries or some parachurch organizations mm-hmm. that maybe are really doing a good job in terms of trying to reach yeah. people, we would see that as not ultimately actually fulfilling all of God's intent unless yeah. those people really get plugged into these gospel communities. So
sure. yeah.
how have you seen that play out?
Yeah, I think it's a fantastic question. I think this idea of the whole person is the way I kind of understand this.
Mm-hmm.
Of if I look at myself, I'm a financial being, I'm a social being, I'm a spiritual being, I'm a relational being. I've got all these different aspects to me, right? And I need a community to help me in all those different walks of life. I need the older men to help me run my finances. I need some brothers, you know, I need some friends.
Right.
There's just so many different aspects to me if I just isolate myself that I need a community mm-hmm. around me. And I think that's God's purpose, really, is to
mm-hmm.
I'm invited into this diverse community of doctors, of people across the economic spectrum, different you know, nationalities even, and so I've got a part to play, and those folks got a part to play to disciple me and to grow me and to mature me in all my different dimensions. So that's what I love about community. And I think that's what the local church really has its finest hour. It offers this, I don't want to say suite of services, but it feels like that often, you know. I feel greedy being in a local church. So many great folks around.
Yeah, so it can be like jumping the gun a little bit. But I think that even when Jesus talks about how when you love one another, right, the world will know that you're my disciples.
Yeah.
Actually, in that phrase alone, right, you already find the seeds of church planting.
Yes.
Because Jesus expects his people to be in relationship with one another.
Yeah.
Right. And there's no better way to conceive of that than putting people into the same local church, into a gospel community, like what you said.
Absolutely.
That's brilliant. All right, well, for our last 10 minutes or so, I'd love for us to just share briefly about some of our own experiences and stories and exposure to church planting. So we all have different backgrounds and different stories here. Ed, maybe I can kick off with you and ask you to share a little bit about some of what you've seen with church planting, how that conviction has grown in you, and then also how you're thinking about church planting in the future with a Mandarin church plant.
Yeah, thanks for giving me a chance to talk about the Mandarin church plant. But let me just move the story back a little bit. I was...
You're welcome to advertise, by the way.
In my previous church, it was... I did not really think much about church planting, I mean, initially, to be honest. Although something didn't quite sit well with me when it seems like what my previous church was happy to do would be to add buildings to building, you know, and add site to site. And there was like a lot of chatter around that, right? Like, why aren't we, like, for example, helping weaker churches to be strengthened, which is one very, very good way to serve as well. And but interestingly, it never actually occurred to the community I was in to that we should be planting churches. So I only got exposed to the idea of planting churches when I started to be exposed to even like the ministry of Tim Keller, or even Mark Dever talking, you know, Nymark's ministry, where they are very big on church planting as well. And I realized that a lot of my Christianity, even the circle I was moving in, even with some talk of community, but essentially in the end, the idea of the gospel is very individualistic. It is me, the Bible, and my relationship with God, right? But church is kind of the thing we have to do, but it's not actually central to the Christian life, in any sense, right? But then with the emphasis on church planting, you begin to see that, okay, wait a minute, there's a reason why, for example, certain things happen in the Bible. We're going to talk about that. But as you see that, you see, wow, it's actually central to God's plan being unfolded. And when you, and also been hearing stories about, exciting stories about what happens to church plants overseas, because in those days, Singapore, is there's less of that. Just got me excited. So when Redemption Hill Church came around, and this South African man has this vision for a church planting church, I was like, wow, curious, right? I wanted to check it out. And I joined Redemption Hill Church in this fairly early stage, I think, when it was... Look, I don't think RHC is the typical church plant story, but I'll leave that story to be told by Simon. I joined it when I was about maybe 100 plus people.
So you weren't technically part of the pioneer generation, is that what you're saying?
That's what I'm saying. I just missed it by that much, right? I joined the church shortly after 1 year plus of its beginning. And but I can see already how it was beneficial, because I came from a much larger church where I think that the tendency to just simply consume, the tendency to just simply be a consumer and just, you know, and receive services rather than actually to serve is actually very evident. But then what I've seen in that early stage of Redemption Hill Church was that everyone was just excited. You go into the service, it's buzzing in the air. People are excited about getting to know each other. People are, you know, excited to serve. You know, they're taking initiative. It's just wonderful, right? So I'm really, I mean, and in some sense, I'm really privileged to be part of the history of, to see how the church has grown over the past 10 years or so, 11 years or so. And in a sense, give me some insight into life cycles of churches. Yeah, if I may say so, that we are slightly late now in our timeline for planting churches.
That's right.
But I'm glad that they're still on the cards for us to be planting churches. I'm excited to see where we're going with that. For me, Mandarin church plant, I do want to make a plug for it, but which is that I think just for the same reasons as mentioned, Singapore need churches. We need churches to reach different demographics. We do actually have quite a sizable, I think, population of people who speak Mandarin as their heart language.
Mm.
Not merely just the older Singaporeans, but even those who came from mainland China, who are working here, from Malaysia, who are working here, setting down here, becoming new citizens, having families here. They too need the gospel, and they need the gospel to be preached in a way that's in a heart language, that's contextualized their culture, in a way that both challenges them, but also affirms where their culture aligns with the gospel.
Right.
So, so that's why we are trying to work towards, and God willing, we will see some sort of church plant, or at least at the beginning of congregation, by the year 2023.
All right. That's wonderful. Great. If you're listening, you can pray that timeline gets sped up a little bit.
You can consider joining us too, to speed up the timeline.
That's great, Ed. Thanks for sharing. Perch, tell us a bit about the background that you were from and that kind of culture of church planting that you came from.
Yeah, sure. So I got saved at 16. I was part of a university fellowship. I wasn't really involved in a church until about 21, when I was part of a church plant. I walked in at this, I'll never forget it. I walked into the service and there were about seven people there. And it was like, this is a church plant. And that was my introduction to church planting. Mm. It was part of this movement in South Africa. There's a broader sort of family of churches, which is really passionate about starting new gospel communities like this,
mm-hmm.
Which incidentally Simon was a part of as well. And that's how that little church plant came into being. And I saw it from day one and I thought, I want to be part of this. I want to help this thing grow.
Mm.
It's at size zero, but I want to be a part of this thing being launched and reaching maturity. So I stuck with that for a good 10 or 11 years. I became a pastor eventually in this little church plant. Mm-hmm. And then one day in 2009, I felt God call me to Singapore to serve his purposes here. I didn't quite know exactly what that looked like, but one thing led to another, and I miraculously got a job as a lawyer here in Singapore.
Mm-hmm.
And I joined RHC at that point. This was late 2009, for a couple of months. And within not even 12 months later, trying to hold down a job as a lawyer in Singapore, working 90-100-hour billable weeks.
As lawyers in Singapore do.
As you do. my wife and I started a church on the side. So that was back in 2010, December mm-hmm. of 2010. You know, Shakespeare said that valor is the better part of discretion. Well, I was very low on discretion, very high on passion and zeal. So there wasn't a lot of planning which went into our little church plant, but we sort of birthed something from nothing, really. Try to pull ourselves up from our bootstraps.
Mm-hmm.
A few folks from RHC actually joined us.
Right.
A handful, and we formed this little gospel community.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it went for about 3 years before a burnout maximum hit us, and just trying to hold down a job and then plant this new community in a foreign city with almost zero planning. I'm embarrassed to admit many years later, and we just hit the wall. So we actually pulled the plug on the church plant,
mm-hmm.
Came up for air. We had to dissolve the community, which was a real sadness,
mm-hmm.
and then joined RHC. That was rejoined RHC back in 2014.
Mm-hmm.
So that is my exposure to church planting. I've tried it, but even that, having gone through that and the burnout, I'm more passionate than ever about church planting.
So, Perch, tell us a little bit. Why are you, like, having had that experience? Why are you so passionate, so committed to it? Even after what was obviously like not the easiest experience?
I think there was a lot of operator error. I think the problem was not with the idea of planting churches, but the problem was the way we executed that idea, which was kind of high passion but low thought, if I can say that. So if I did it again, I think I would be a little slower, a bit more careful. But the mm-hmm. actual idea of starting new churches to reach other people, to look after and disciple other groups of people.
Right.
I think that is just a wonderful idea, which I have a huge amount of passion for. I see it in the Bible. I think it's there.
Mm.
I think we should all be giving ourselves it in some way, supporting it somehow. So even though I got burnt by it, I'm more passionate than ever for it, for sure.
That's super inspiring to hear. Super, super inspiring. And since you've been on staff here the last 3 or so years, you've definitely been a real encouragement to all of us to make sure that that goal that we have is not just a distant goal, but something which we're executing. So that's super encouraging. So my story briefly, we didn't have too much longer to go, but was part of the same family of churches that Perch was from in South Africa, although we were from different cities and didn't really know each other. I think we'd met maybe once before I went to Singapore. Yeah. And so I was a pastor in a church in South Africa, and because of that strong culture of church planting that Perch mentioned, one of the questions that elders and pastors in churches were often asked was, where are you planning to plant? It was almost an expectation everyone was going to be on mission in some ways. And so from a youngish age, was thinking and praying about where God would send us. And the story of how we came to Singapore is not a story that I'll tell now, but the long and short of it is that we really did feel God speak to us actually very clearly and lead us, that this was where he was calling us to be. That was surprising to us because we thought we would be somewhere third world and not where there are as many churches, although as we shared earlier, there still is a need for more churches here. But we did come to Singapore in September 2008, and we had another couple from our church in South Africa who are still with us now, who were just ordinary members of the church in South Africa, who heard about the vision, and they said they'll quit their jobs and they'll move to Singapore and find jobs and then support us. And Alex and Kerry Mitchell did that.
Amazing.
Absolute heroes of the RHC story. And so they sold up their lives, quit their jobs, moved across, found work here. They went through a tough time the first 6 months or so, just trying to get visas, etc. My wife and I also got jobs here, so we had visas and were able to stay. And then similar to what Perch was saying in terms of kind of being bivocational initially, although I was not a lawyer and not working 90 to 100 hour weeks, just to be very clear, we started to invite people and started a Bible study, and that was how RHG got started. So looking back, I wish there had been a little bit more planning as well, but there's something of just God's sovereign plans, and somehow word was spread, and people like Ed and others heard about this small little church plant that was wanting to preach the gospel and hopefully be on a mission to see other churches planted. And we just had the most amazing people that God sent our way in those early years that really just kind of built a dream team that enabled RSC to become what it is today. So that was 12 years ago, and we've kind of been able to watch RHC over the last 12 or so years, and it's really been a joy. And I think for me as a pastor, the what fuels my conviction is seeing people whose lives have been changed, seeing people who've come to know Jesus, seeing people, even now, we go to Sydney Leisure, some people serving in kids' ministry, and I remember one young lady in particular was one of the first people that came to faith at RHC. I remember who she was invited by. I remember the first Sunday I met her at RHC nearly 12 years ago. I remember when she got baptized. And those are just the most precious things that that no one can take away from you. And so the thought that our church could be a part of seeing other churches like that established, and for many of the pastors in Singapore to have the joy of seeing people saved and baptized and grow in their faith is just, that's all we live for. So
it's wonderful.
Church planting is super exciting from that point of view.
Absolutely.
Alright, well, I think we're just about out of time for our episode, but we're going to continue this next week as we try and explore a little bit more from the scriptures, what the Bible shows us about church planting. So do join us there. But Perch, thanks so much for joining us for this episode. It's been great
thanks
to have you.
Me.
And look forward to chatting again more next episode. Thanks, Ed.
See you again.